Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. In June of 2002, while riding in a taxi in Washington, D.C. with a group of new friends, I overheard an American woman now living in Israel passionately described her belief that teaching children to be a suicide bomber is the worst form of child abuse imaginable. Elena Radley Rosenman is a clinical social worker and an organizer of the Women's Interfaith Encounter, a group of Muslim, Christian, and Jewish women who meet regularly in Jerusalem, Israel. Elena and I spoke again by phone a few days later, and I asked her to tell us about this group and its ideals.
It's part of a larger organization called the Interfaith Encounters Association in Israel. And I got started just last summer when this new organization was being formed, and I said, is anything being done for the women? Because I'm concerned in interfaith in the Middle East, it's dominated by rabbis and sheikhs and priests.
Which
the women.
Normally exclude women.
Right. It totally excludes women. Women's voice in general in the Holy Land is not heard in any level in politics, in religion, in the economic sphere. So I said, okay, if you're going to do interfaith encounter, then let's empower the women to meet together and to strengthen themselves and to strengthen the feminine energy in religion, because that energy is concentrated on reconciliation and tolerance and understanding and could mitigate against the kind of religious distortions we have now in our region, which are the masculine aspects of religion, which really are focused on vengeance and justice and unfortunately result in daily killings in our region.
So how do these encounters work? How are they set up? Who's involved?
Well, I found a wonderful Muslim coordinator and a wonderful Christian coordinator. These are both Israeli Arab women who work with me as the Jewish coordinator. And we spent months meeting together and discussing how we could have a women's interfaith encounter that would truly reflect the three faiths and be sensitive to them and not be dominated by the Jewish or the Israeli point of view, which happens so often. So after we finally created a workable model, we got together 30 women, 10 from each faith, and we started studying topics of relevance to women from the point of view of the three different faiths. And then that grew into visiting each other in each other's homes and starting to reach out to other women's organizations to be aware of what we're doing. We feel very committed to it because while we spend 3 hours together in a meeting in Jerusalem, Muslim, Christian, and Jewish women, Palestinian and Israeli, meeting and talking together and studying and listening to each other, for those 3 hours, peace and harmony exists in our room and in our hearts. And that really helps to strengthen us from when we have to walk outside that room and go into an environment that is just filled with violence and hatred and killing.
I want you to describe that environment, but before we leave the room, how many women are there? How often do you meet? How do people become involved in the organization?
Well, we have about 30 women who are involved, and at any meeting, about 20 to 25 will show up. And how they get there is extremely difficult in that in the environment we live, it takes a tremendous act of faith and courage to come to such a gathering because the general society not just frowns on it or discourages it, but really thinks we're crazy. And so people come to it by hearing from us about it, and we very much keep a balance, and it's difficult because we really have to nurture the Palestinian women, the Christian and Muslim women, to attend and not be overwhelmed by Jewish women. So we keep the balance very equal so that everyone feels comfortable, and we make all our decisions in a consensus mode. Everyone has a chance to talk and be involved in it, and it's a very, very loving and supportive process.
When you say 30 members, is that nationwide or just in Jerusalem?
This particular Women's Interfaith Encounter is a Jerusalem one. And we are just now starting to branch out because when I go back, July 11th and 12th, we're having a Women's Interfaith Encounter conference in Nazareth with Muslim, Christian, Jewish, and Druze women who live in the north of our country. And this conference will be the launching of a new Women's Interfaith Encounter in the north with ongoing activities for them to be meeting together.
What's it like on the outside when you don't have the peace and security of being in the room together and meeting as friends?
Well, when you say the outside, I guess you mean in the streets of Jerusalem and in the life of Jerusalem.
That's right.
Well, right now it's very intense and very difficult. We have almost daily suicide bombings in the city. And we have a level of political tension that is hard to describe. I don't know how to describe it to other people. And when people say to me, "Oh, I can imagine what it's like to be in Jerusalem," I always say to them, "No, you can't imagine. Unless you live in a war zone, which is what we're in, and experience the kind of trauma that we're under daily, it's very difficult to talk about."
Can you try and describe it for us, for those of us who are not there?
Well, one thing is any restaurant, movie, public building, store that you go into, you're confronted by a man with a machine gun who searches everything that you're carrying. And if you look at all suspicious, he has the men raise their shirts to be sure that they don't have an explosive belt around their waist. And the streets are deserted. We have no tourists coming, no visitors, so that every place is just half empty that you go into, and many, many things have closed. There's a whole feeling of desolation and abandonment that we feel daily in Jerusalem, besides the awareness that we have to be enormously alert. Just the night before I left Jerusalem for this trip, a friend had parked their car at our house because they came for a Shabbat meal. And on Shabbat, all of a sudden, there were the army and the sappers outside our windows because there was some suspicious object near this car, and they almost blew up the car. But instead, they blew up whatever the suspicious object was, and fortunately, it turned out to be nothing. But it's just routine to have the sappers there taking care of suspicious things.
The sappers?
Sappers, I guess. I don't know. It means the security people that come to disarm explosive devices, and they have robots that do this. It's just a routine. I mean, you arrive in a meeting and someone's late and they say, "I'm sorry, there was a suspicious object alert," which means that the whole area they were in came to a stop and nobody could move until that device was disarmed. And these are just, as I say, these are routine things that you just become used to. And yet when I'm walking around in Washington or California and none of this is happening, I realize that I've become used to an insane environment and I accept it as normal.
Is that normal for when you get on buses? Because many of the bombers that we read about in the press here report an explosion that occurred on a bus.
Right. Well, that's a target of choice for them because they're guaranteed to kill a lot of people in the process. Many people in Jerusalem do not ride buses, and many people do not ride inner-city buses. But I myself, I know that my life is in God's hands, and I trust that whatever is supposed to happen will happen. So I don't make daily calculations about what is safe and what is not safe. Recently, I set out to go to the north of the country to meet with the Muslim, Christian, Druze, and Jewish women that are planning our conference in the north. And as I set out on a bus, I heard that just that morning, a bus on the route where I was going had been blown up, and many people had been killed. But I went on my trip. I mean, I wasn't going to get off the bus and say, I can't travel on a bus today. So I don't allow terrorism to triumph over me and curtail my life, because that's the object of terrorism, is to just terrorize people so they don't leave their house, or in our case, they would like us all to leave the country. I go about my business because I refuse to let terrorism dominate me.
Ilana, let's talk about the terrorism, the roots of it, the training that goes into causing a person to become a terrorist, where they kill themselves and as many other people as they hope that they are able.
Well, Barry, this is something that is enormously upsetting to me, because I don't understand the silence and the acquiescence of the world in the face of what I consider the ultimate form of child abuse. This is such a cynical use of children, because in the Palestinian Authority, since 1993, when they were given their own territories and their own Department of Education, their teachers have been training their children to make the ultimate sacrifice for their nation. Awards are given for the best poems in elementary schools about martyring yourself. Arafat himself calls continually for a million martyrs to march on Jerusalem. And basically, these are children that are being taught to kill themselves. And the imams and Muslim religious authorities, they sanction this and extol this as a religious virtue. They're taught that this is a religious imperative to become a martyr for Islam. And they have great rewards in paradise. And then to compound the cynicism, the families of these children that blow themselves up receive a monthly stipend for life from Saddam Hussein. And Arafat kicks in money every month, too, that he gets from the European Union to supposedly run his country. So this is not something that's covered up or hidden. I mean, people read daily in the newspaper about suicide bombers, children, the majority of them are 16, 17, 19 years old. For years, they've been indoctrinated to kill themselves and to kill as many other civilians as possible. And I wonder, you know, where is the UN? Where are world authorities? Where are all the international children's associations that aren't having a tremendous outcry of how can a society train their children to kill themselves? You know, I mean, I was thinking about this the other day, that 4,000 years ago, Abraham was stopped from sacrificing his child to God, that God stopped his hand and gave a lamb instead and said, no, you don't sacrifice children. This was the end to a practice that was prevalent all over the idol-worshipping world at the time. It was one of the enormous social changes that Abraham brought 4,000 years ago. And here we have now, in this day and age, a return to child sacrifice in the name of religion. And it's so refined that it isn't even that a parent takes a knife to his child's throat. He just supports the whole system and sends him to schools and to religious authorities that train him to blow himself up and kill himself.
Why are the international organizations quiet?
Oh, well, I have no idea, except that I see this astonishing aspect that in the newspaper, I just saw a couple weeks ago, the New York Times was referring to a suicide bomber who had blown himself up and killed 19 people. And they referred to him as the Palestinian militant who detonated the explosives. I mean, it's mind-boggling.
It makes it anonymous.
It makes it anonymous and almost unclear. I mean, how do you know that this is a person blowing themselves up? And what's even more staggering to me is just to see in the newspaper now that President Bush, in his Middle East statement, referred to suicide bombers as homicide bombers. I mean, these kinds of blurring of distinctions, the use of language to distort reality is to me a horrendous part of the problem. As if these children are being trained to kill other people with bombs, they're homicide bombers, rather than the hideous atrocity that these children are being trained to kill themselves. Whether or not they're able to kill anyone else is a matter of luck or planning or something. But for sure, they're going to kill themselves. These are suicide bombers. And where are the responsible people on the Palestinian side who are able to stand up to this vicious atrocity and say, no, our children are precious to us, our children are a resource? Even when recently Hanan Ashrari and Saeb Erekat signed a proclamation against suicide bombers in Arafat lately, is condemning them, what do they say? They say it's an ineffective tactic. They say it's counterproductive. They don't say, this is hideous. This is a heinous crime that we're doing to our children. There's no moral concern.
Ilana, I want to ask you about what the Women's Interfaith Encounter does with this question. But first, I want to remind our listeners that this week on Radio Curious, we're talking with Ilana Radley Rosenman, an American woman who has lived off and on in Israel since 1968 and made her home permanently in Jerusalem since 1992. This is Radio Curious, and I'm Barry Vogel. Ilana, how does the Women's Interfaith Encounter handle these questions?
Well, I'll tell you, it's very interesting because, as our name implies, we are an encounter. Our purpose is for women of different faiths to meet together and strengthen each other and strengthen the sanity of our religions. And in that environment, just being together and meeting together is a miracle. Because in the environment we live in, people don't speak to each other, and people are afraid of each other, and people are filled with hatred and vengeance. So just coming into a room together and opening our hearts and minds to each other, we create an ocean of peace and harmony in the midst of all of this. And within that environment, we do not discuss politics, and we are able to console each other for the atrocities that are going on. Recently, one of the women in our group lost her grandson. He fell as a soldier in Jenin. And Muslim and Christian Arab women in our encounter were able to go with me to her home to console her on the loss of her grandson, even though they were working at the same time to bring food to the village of Jenin, to the people who were under siege there and were unable to receive food. These kinds of simple things are so remarkable in the environment that we live in. And so this is how we are, simply by being human beings, by being women together, mothers, grandmothers, and daughters together, are attempting to strengthen the truth of religion and the values of compassion and reconciliation, even though we are involved in such a vicious war.
Ilana, you have a story about your son.
Yes. Well, part of the reason I feel such a passion in the work that I'm doing is because my own son, 5 years ago, was a survivor in a terrorist suicide bombing. He was in between two bombers who blew themselves up while he was walking down the middle of the street in the middle of the day, minding his own business. And he was burned over 40% of his body and received over 100 pieces of shrapnel from the front and the back. His leg was shattered. His eardrums were perforated. He was in the hospital for months being treated for burns and in rehabilitation and for post-traumatic stress. And it took him years of deep inner work to heal himself and recover from finding himself at 16 years of age unprepared in the middle of a battlefield. And thank God he's doing very well. And thank God, because little girls a few feet away from him received a piece of shrapnel that went into their heart or their lung, and they died immediately. So thank God he is doing very well. But knowing the enormous suffering that goes on in these situations, and knowing very well from the work that I do the enormous suffering that Palestinian people are going through under siege, there's just so much suffering on all sides that I feel myself a tremendous impetus to do whatever I can to unite with other women to find a way to strengthen nonviolence and cooperation and understanding and the truth of our religions, so that our religions can't be distorted and used in a way that people continue to kill themselves in the Holy Land.
What kind of support do you get from other people who live in Israel for this work?
Well, there is a tiny fraction of people who are interested in these kinds of activities and in what I call peace-building work. Unfortunately, given the environment that we're in, it's so painful and it's so traumatic that the majority of people are unable to get beyond the trauma. So I have many friends on the right wing who think I'm absolutely crazy for talking to Muslim and Christian Arab women and doing these types of things. I'm sure some of them, when they speak about me, think I'm really almost betraying what they believe in. And I have friends on the left wing who think I'm crazy for what I'm doing because they believe I should be in the streets with them demonstrating against the occupation and against the government and bringing the government down and looking for political solutions. And they think religion's a waste of time. So there's not a lot of support for what I'm doing.
Can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Well, I'm a clinical social worker by profession, and that's what I did for the majority of my professional life in the States. And in Israel, I got involved in really working as a coach. I started Success Works, where I assist businesses and individuals to be setting up businesses and careers, expanding and marketing what they're doing. I've set up professional women's networks for women to build their careers and assist each other. I ran big business and career women's conferences to enhance women's career performances. I started a group called Women for Women in Politics, where we have women fundraising for women candidates to increase the amount of women in our parliament, the Knesset. So I've been involved in various forms of empowering women within Israeli society, and I continue to do that in my professional life, and have gotten involved in this peace building through interfaith because I really feel that women are the key to change the environment that we're living in and to turn it around completely so that religion can triumph.
Ilana, what can people in the United States do to support what you are doing in Israel?
Well, on a very simple level, one thing that our Women's Interfaith Encounter has encouraged is for those members of our group, every day at 1 o'clock, to take 1 minute and to pray for the welfare and safety and well-being of the members of our group. And as people here have asked me what they could do, I just say, well, if you could, when you remember, at 1 o'clock, just take a minute to send prayers for our well-being and for our safety and for our sanity to strengthen us in our work. That's something that is simple but very beneficial to us. And if people are more inclined, they can read on the Internet about our organization and find out ways that they could assist us in practical means, too.
What is that website?
Our website is www.interfaith, I-N-T-E-R-F-A-I-T-H, encounter, E-N-C-O-U-N-T-E-R, .org.
And if somebody wants to contact you directly through email, how would they do that?
Well, they can contact me through my name is E-R-O-Z-E-N-M-A-N @hotmail.com.
Ilana Rosenman, thank you very much for joining us on Radio Curious. And before we close, I'd like to ask you to tell us about an interesting book.
Well, I'll tell you, in Israel, I never have the time to read. But when I was here recently in Washington, I met with a wonderful woman who just wrote a book, and she handed it to me, and I've been reading it. Her name is Deborah Mathis, wrote a book called Yet a Stranger, Why Black Americans Still Don't Feel at Home. And I've just started reading it, and I love reading it because it's so important to me to be connected with the ongoing injustices and suffering of blacks here in America. It keeps me in touch with people all over the world that are suffering in other situations and in other contexts, and helps me to get out of just my perspective that what our suffering that we're going through in the Middle East. And I find it really very strengthening to be aware of and in touch with people that are struggling and trying to overcome their suffering in other parts of the world, and it makes me feel united with a much larger humanity.
Ilana Rosenman, thank you very much for joining us on Radio Curious.
Well, thank you so much, Barry, for giving me the opportunity to speak with you and hopefully to touch the hearts and minds of your listeners.
Elena Radley Rosenman is an organizer of the Women's Interfaith Encounter that meets in Jerusalem, Israel. The book she recommends is Yet a Stranger, Why Black Americans Still Don't Feel at Home by Deborah Mathis. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious are available for $10 each. I'll give you the address in just a moment. At Radio Curious, we appreciate your cards, letters, suggestions, and ideas for future programming. And here's the address. Radio Curious, Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, that's U-K-I-A-H, California, 95482. The phone is 707-462-6541, and the email address is curious@pacific.net. You've been listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Stay curious. Be creative, and join us again next week.